Chapter 34. "That dress doesn't do justice to your beauty," a young man said to Liv as she emerged from a warehouse some of the displaced women and their children had taken over in Garriston. "Nor do those quarters do justice to your gifts." He smiled the smile of a man who knows he's gorgeous. "I'm Zymon. I'm your tutor." And he would have been gorgeous, had not his entire look been spoiled by the bandage over his nose and two black eyes. Zymon looked maybe 16 or 17, Liv's age, but maybe older, or maybe he simply carried himself like he was older. He had a mop of curly black hair, an aquiline nose made even bigger by the bandage over it, a wide mouth and perfect bright white teeth, Atashian skin, heavy brows, light blue eyes with a ring of many colours beneath the halo. He wore a new white shirt. Who had new shirts just after a huge battle? And over his sleeves, his forearms were covered with multicoloured vambraces with 5 thick bands of colour against a white background. He wore a sparkling clean cloak that echoed the pattern, from a black fuzzy band for sub-red to red, orange, yellow and green. A 5-colour polychrome. 5. There were only perhaps 20 5-colour polys in the Chromeria, maybe a few more still in training. If this boy was cocky, it was for good reason. Insufferable. "You lose a fight?" Liv asked. How rude. "Failed an assassination attempt, actually. Took a punch in the face, and got beaten for my failure when I got back, after swimming through shark-infested waters." He smiled. "You're joking. Terrible sense of humour if I were. It's not very funny, is it? You're serious? Second time's the charm, I guess. Come, we need to get you out of those clothes and into something more becoming." He was her tutor, put over her by Lord Omnichrome himself, so Liv supposed that meant she had to obey him. She shrugged and followed him through the city. The warehouse wasn't far from the Travertine Palace because it felt safer to be close to the soldiers. Being a woman alone during wartime meant never being off your guard. But as Liv followed Zymon, she saw that his garb was better than armour. "Is everyone so afraid of drafters here?" she asked. "Afraid? They respect us, which is only right, don't you think?"
"I suppose so."
"You suppose so? Ah, so this is why you needed a tutor." Well, that was patronizing, and Liv didn't appreciate it one bit. "The Chromeria makes slaves, Liv. It depends on making those it trains, being so indebted to them that you become at best an indentured servant, with the term of your indenture being the rest of your life. A slave, in other words. The free reject that. We recognize instead the natural order as it is. Did you choose to be born a great beauty? Of course not, but you are. You can do with that what you will. Similarly, you were born a drafter. We can wish that all were born with our gifts, and the Colour Prince is investigating how this might be done. But the fact remains, we are special. We have a gift that other men and women don't. We didn't do anything to earn that gift. We can't choose to be drafters, but we are. We don't ask those who have gifts to chain themselves, as we don't ask those who are skilled in running to get fat so they don't make us feel bad for being slow. We are what we are, as wild and free as nature made us. When you walk the streets as a drafter, men know that if they accost you, you can kill them. They can fear that, or simply respect it like they'd respect a woman carrying a pistol, with the advantage, of course, being that a pistol only has one shot." They passed workers clearing rubble-strewn streets, and finally arrived at a little store undamaged in the fighting. An old woman greeted her.
"So good to have business, thank you, thank you. Oh, and so beautiful you are. A marvel I'll make you. I have an order for 3 dresses, yes?" she asked Zymon.
"If that's what Lord Omnichrome ordered," Zymon said.
"Very well, then, strip down," she told Liv.
Liv looked at her, then over at Zymon, who showed no inclination to leave.
"Do you mind?" she asked him.
He looked her up and down, grinning mischievously.
"Very much, but as you wish. Can't fault me for trying."
He stepped outside and left her in the capable hands of the seamstress. The woman took her measurements quickly, compared it to her height, had her turn around a few times, and then allowed her to dress. She made 3 quick sketches and showed them to Liv.
"Everything is to be the finest possible for you, my lady. This first will be wool, but it's a goat's wool from the Arbornean Mountains. Warm, but so soft you won't believe it."
"That sounds wonderful,"
Amazing. Expensive. Liv hated herself for saying it, but she'd been poor for so long she couldn't help it.
Ah, that's not the start of it. I'm doing the trim of your silk dress with true Murex purple. The finest silk, too, of course. Who's going to waste true purple to dye bad silk? 10,000 Murex shells harvested just for you.
Liv felt a little sick to her stomach. Silk? True purple?
I'm really sorry. What I meant is, I don't have any money. Maybe plain wool? Just one dress?
Truth was, she didn't even have the money to pay for that, but her pride couldn't take admitting utter poverty.
Oh, you pretty little thing, you don't have to pay. The Lord Omnichrome is taking care of everything. One warm dress, one for everyday wear. That one will be upland attaché and cotton, and one to dazzle. Looks like you could use some new shifts and undergarments, too.
Please. I don't generally... Well, war, you know.
Of course, of course. And we'll get you a clean dress to wear in the meantime.
That offer turned into a clean dress and a hot bath, ostensibly because the old woman didn't want her getting the dress dirty, but Liv thought the seamstress was happy to have someone to spoil, someone to talk to. As she scrubbed herself with a sponge and let the hot water unknot her muscles, Liv fought the rush of tears just below the surface. She blew out her breath, feeling like she could cry and she would feel better afterward, but she didn't want to look all splotchy and swollen. She was sure the old woman wouldn't care. She had the air of someone who'd understand, but Zyman would come back to pick her up later, and he'd ask. And how can you explain why you were crying when the answer would either take an hour or one word? Neither would make him understand. She'd just look like a weak girl. Liv blew out another breath.
That's a lot of sighing, the old woman said.
Liv hadn't noticed her come in.
Have you ever realized that everything you ever believed was a lie?
Everything? The sky's green now.
I didn't mean...
Teasing, child.
The old woman paused, then heaved a little sigh of her own.
I believed my husband was faithful to me. When that fell, it seemed like all the world did with it.
Liv hesitated.
No, child. Don't tell me. I'm a stranger. Take my kindness, but don't trust so much, so easily. You're a beautiful young woman in a perilous place. Put on some armor. Just remember what's armor and what's you, so when it's time to take it off, you can.
The old woman walked out, and Liv knew that she'd done her a kindness greater than she could have by listening to her churning thoughts. Liv had joined the enemy. She could excuse herself and say that she'd hoped her action might inspire the Colour Prince to save Kip and Karis, and it had. But in truth, she'd lost faith in everything the Chromaria had taught her. If the fruit is poison, why respect the tree? But if the Chromaria itself was corrupt, how deep did that corruption go? If they taught one lie, how many others had they espoused? It made her feel sick to her stomach, like she was looking into the abyss. If the Chromaria was corrupt, and the Chromaria was supposed to be a central font of Orholam's will, what did that say about Orholam himself? How could he let such corruption be? Either he didn't care, or he didn't have the power to do anything about it, or he didn't exist. Liv felt a chill despite the hot water. It was a thought that couldn't be called back. But there was no answer. Doesn't care, can't fix, or doesn't exist. No matter what, things were not as Liv had believed. It was like having a nice warm cloak of comforting suppositions ripped off her shoulders. So be it. This was what it was to be an adult, to be a strong woman. Her father had raised her to believe certain things, but her father wasn't omniscient. He could be wrong. And if he was, Liv wasn't going to be a moral coward. She would face the world as it was. She'd once heard an old philosopher quoted in one of her classes, "The truth is so dear to me that if Orholam stood on one side and truth on the other, I would turn my back on my creator himself." So be it. Fealty to one. That was the Danavis motto. Liv's fealty would be to the truth. Simply considering that was scary, terrifying as she thought about the decisions she made all the time based on what was right, which was based on what was holy, which was based on what the Chromaria taught was holy, which was based on what the Chromaria believed about Orholam. Taking out that linchpin? But at the same time, it was tremendously freeing.
She would be strong. This was hard, but she would do it. She wouldn't shrink from hard truths or embrace comforting delusions. She would be a warrior for truth. She finished bathing, the impulse to tears forgotten, steel in her spine, and then she ate what the old woman brought her, though it was only a thin broth dotted with a few potatoes. "It isn't up to my normal standards, but, well, war, you know," the old woman said, a twinkle in her eye. Liv laughed. "After I finish your dresses, I'll be able to serve you something much better, I promise." When she was finished, Liv felt 1,000 times better. She thanked the old woman and stepped outside. Simon was sitting on a crude bench, tossing little blue discs out of one hand into the air and shooting them with green from the other.
"You were waiting for me the whole time?" Liv asked.
He tossed a blue disc up and blasted it into oblivion, harder than necessary.
"Oh, I forgot about you," she said.
Oops. That didn't come out quite like she meant it.
"You get away with that shit because you're beautiful?" Simon asked. "If so, quit it."
"You keep saying that. I don't know if you're trying to make a backhanded compliment or a stupid four-handed insult."
She wasn't beautiful. She knew that. On her best day, she could manage a bit of cute. Anyone who said different was trying to get something from her. Simon looked like he was going to tear into her, but then his mouth twitched.
"Four-handed insult?" he asked. "That's your own invention."
But he grinned.
"I was hoping you wouldn't notice."
She scowled, feeling stupid.
"I thought you weren't a blue," she said quickly.
He had 5 colours on his cloak and van braces, but not blue and not superviolet.
"Not yet," he said.
He drafted another blue disc. Liv could tell the colour was off, and in barely more than a second it frayed apart and dissolved.
"Hoping I grow into it. It's so close it's infuriating. Blue has so many uses. Plus, as nice as it already is to be a 5, I can't help but dream of being a full-spectrum polychrome."
He was reaching to be a 7-colour drafter with exactly the same kind of statements Liv had used a few months ago when she was longing to have her 2nd colour recognised. It was never enough, was it? There's always someone better than you. Still, if 7 colours might be within reach for Simon, that meant the boy was on another plane altogether.
"Sorry about forgetting," Liv said, looking at her feet. "I didn't think I was important enough for you to wait around for me."
He smiled, and broken nose, black eyes and all, he was terribly handsome.
"Come on," he said. "I've got something to show you."